Welcome back for episode 67 of Count Me In. I'm your host, Mitch Roshong, and I'll be bringing you to Adam's conversation with the Vice President of Finance for SSA Marine, Gordon Hoffman. SSA Marine is a global transportation and trucking firm with operations across five continents. Gordon is responsible for directing the financial strategy of the company and leading people and teams to efficiently move commerce. In this episode, he talked to Adam about how organizational culture plays such an important role in employee retention and personal productivity, particularly within his finance function. Let's head over to their conversation to hear more now.
So to start off, what are the drivers that help to create a culture of productivity within an organization?
Yeah, so there's three main drivers that we're really focusing on right now. And what those are is, one is just providing meaning in the work that's being done. If you have people that are just showing up and doing tasks, you find that, they'll start to space out. They're not really focused on them, and they'll get what needs to be done, but there's never really any emphasis to go above and beyond that or look for process, for ways to improve. And what we've been doing to bring some focus in that is really just trying to create a connection between the company vision and the actual work, which can be a little bit tricky when you're talking about finance and accounting, because the vision for our company is we partner to move commerce with efficiency, flexibility, and integrity. And at a top level, that's really kind of challenging to say, well, what does that have to do with finance? But from there, what we've done is broken that down and really made a trail from our vision, which how does that translate into values? How does that translate into our core long-term objectives? And then finally, what are the strategies that help us achieve those objectives? And once you've done those three, four pieces, it's much easier to sit down with your team and say, this is what we're trying to accomplish, and this is how it fits with the overall company vision. And it kind of brings people into the company and what we're trying to accomplish. And so that's a bit of a motivational factor that I think is really important to having people engaged and really thinking about how they can improve and how they can be productive and how they can add value. Once you have people engaged at that level, there's some more task-related items that we really focus on then, which is one, make your productivity measurable. Really, you need to have some KPIs. I noticed in the past for us, we were on the operations side very focused on KPIs, the business operations side. But when it actually came to finance and accounting, you started asking about what our metrics are, and there weren't very many of them. Yeah, so once we've really created that motivation and buy-in for the company, coming up with ways that you can actually measure your productivity. Because, a lot of the times on the business side, you can really focus on your operations. And in our business, what's important is how many containers we've moved in an hour. And so a lot of our business was focused around that. But then when we got on the back end of finance and accounting, we stopped doing KPIs. And so we now adjusted that. So those KPIs are just as important for measuring productivity within your finance and really driving and showing people how you're improving. Then the final item on there is just creating priorities and making sure that you're checking into those priorities on a weekly basis. It's very easy, I've found, on the finance accounting side, we're the people that fix the problems and you're always putting out the fires, and then you lose focus on really what is value adding. So taking some time on a weekly basis to readjust your priorities and make sure that you're focused on whatever those top three items or five items are in the coming week that really are going to add value to the company.
So now, it seems like everybody in the whole world currently is working from home. How have you been able to kind of implement these things, switching to a work from home workforce?
Yeah, it's interesting that, we were talking about this probably 3 or 4 weeks before COVID really started impacting everyone, and said we want to be able to make it so that people can work at home and work remotely more often, because especially with the younger generations, this is incredibly motivating for them, and it's like a value they see in their business. So it really comes around, like, once again, it's like setting priorities and then setting expectations, and then being able to measure them so that because you can't sit down and have a chat with someone or walk over to their desk and have a chat with them and say, well, how are things going? What do you have on your plate? You have to have other ways to really be able to demonstrate that, you know, you are getting what needs to be done. Everybody's on the same page. So in a way, it's more documentation, which is can get a little bit scary because it feels like you're creating a lot of bureaucracy. But by creating that documentation, it forces you into like the third item I talked about is like, you know, really doing that weekly review of what your priorities are and then making sure that you're staying on task for them. So it really just the work from home culture is just reinforced that you need to do this going forward.
So do you have some examples to share of success?
Yeah, so we've got some like really granular levels of examples. One thing that we found that's been incredibly successful for us is time blocking, where people just, you know, set out like 2 hours in their day and I'm going to get this done. And I'm not going to answer email. I'm not going to, you know, answer chat or anything like that. And, you know, when we have people do that and really honor those 2 hours, the feedback we consistently get is like, I can't believe how much I got done. It's like, I was able to knock that out. You know, and it was a lot easier than I was originally thinking. Rather than taking what I thought was going to be a full day project, I got done in like 2 or 3 hours. So time blocking has been one of like the first successes that we've gotten a lot of positive feedback from. The second thing that's been, you know, very beneficial to us is on the prioritization. We, as an organization, really mix our FP&A, or historically we mixed our FP&A and our accounting groups together. And what we were seeing is that there was a lot of conflict in demand for people's time that wasn't really effective in actually getting things done. So people were kind of doing both jobs halfway instead of doing one of them completely. And we weren't making, you know, the deadlines that we were expecting to make, or the quality of the product wasn't good. So we ended up really splitting those pieces up. And we did that by like just digging into each of those processes and understanding what the bottlenecks were and seeing that there's not a good resolution for this if you're putting both of these tasks on one person's plate. Like there's no correct way to prioritize. And by looking at those priorities, we were able to say, you know, we have to reorganize this a little bit and put these responsibilities with one person, and we'll have someone else really oversee those day-to-day accounting items.
You know, I think those are some great successes, but with every success comes downfalls. Are there any pitfalls that somebody should look out for when they're trying to implement some of these suggestions that you've made?
Yeah, the big one is don't try and implement a perfect system on day one. You'll get a massive revolt from your people. You know, there are some accountants, I would say, that really want a lot of structure in their place. But once you move away from public accounting, a lot of people are trying to get away from, you know, keeping their time and, you know, having to log every single hour that they do. And so as soon as you start creating that structure again, there's this just feeling from a lot of people that's like, oh no, you're trying to put a lot of control on me. And that's really not what we're trying to do. And so, you know, start small and just take like very high level activities that say, I just want to understand, you know, there's these 7 tasks that we do as a group throughout the month. Like it's a high level task. Let's just record how much time you're spending on each one of those. Once that starts to become comfortable for people, what you end up then starting seeing is, you know, oh, those 7 tasks aren't enough, or I want to break those 7 tasks down. And so you just have like an iterative process where you build out this tracking system and prioritization system. And over time, you can get more and more detailed, but you're not shocking anybody on day one that here comes Big Brother. We're going to be watching everything you're doing and we're going to be micromanaging you. What ends up happening is people almost start micromanaging themselves because they see this productivity and this focus. And it's like, well, I need to get this done and I want to get that done. And I need to prioritize this over this. And they start creating it all on their own rather than having like a top down pushing it onto them. The other thing is that, you know, one productivity methodology is not going to work for an entire group. So you need to be flexible on that. When I kind of first started on this journey and I was doing some research on it, And I found there's something like 20 different philosophies on productivity out there. And there's a lot of overlap between them, and you can pick and choose between one or the other. But one of the ways I read that it's described is you got some people who are very visual, like they just want to have a chart that they can see and it's all written out. Other people are very, you know, tactile. They want to be able to move notepads around, or they want to be able to scratch things off, or they actually want to have stickies on a wall where they move one piece to another and another to another. And then there's abstract people that end up doing a lot of it in their head, and they just need a couple of reminders here and there. And so if you try and force one of those methodologies on any one person, and it doesn't fit for them, once again, you're going to get a revolt. So you need to be flexible and really focus on what works for each individual, and then bring that all up and take the themes that come from everyone. And that's kind of your overall philosophy for your group.
I think those are some great things to look out for, just especially the reminder to say, hey, everybody doesn't learn or go through projects the same way that the next person does. And you have to adapt your system so that each person can be successful.
Yeah, I think that's probably one of the most important things, that, you know, that you have a lot of individuals in your group, and you want to have that diversity in your group. But it makes it a little bit more challenging as a manager, because then you have to still, you have to manage to each one of those personalities, rather than trying to have just, you know, that one philosophy for an entire group.
So then how can you ultimately use this culture to drive employee retention?
So we've been doing some study on retention, and, you know, like I was talking about earlier, it's really, there's this desire for people to work remotely already. And the problem that you run into with working remotely, like historically, has been that people, it's like, how do you hold people accountable? How do you know that people stay productive? Because there's this thought, like, if you're sitting in the same room with people, you can really stay on top of them. And that's not desirable anymore. People want to be able to work remotely. And clearly we're 4 weeks into COVID now, and we've been working remotely. We went through our year-end audit, and we actually added an additional audit to the process, and we basically only added one day to the overall audit process, and we were one day late. And that was, we never worked remote before. So it shows that, yes, you can work remote, you can stay productive. And so you just have to have these metrics and prioritization, and having that available, you then free people up to get the work done when they can get the work done, and still within the timeframe and the, whatever requirements that you have. The other thing that this helps with retention is really creating more time to work on interesting projects, because as you create productivity, you know, it frees up time for people. And I've actually used that as very much as a motivating factor for doing this. It's like, look, you don't have to be working 60 hours a week. A lot of that time is non-productive time. It's stuff that, you know, we feel like it's important, or someone's telling you it's important, but at the end of the day, you can find out, you know, maybe I didn't need to work on that, or someone else could have resolved that, or, you know, it can wait 2 weeks and I can focus on these other items now. And so we're not, you know, you tell people, we're not trying to be big brother here. What we're trying to do is create more time for you. And whether that is, you know, to take on more interesting projects, or have more time to stay at home with your family, you know, that's really what's more important and meaningful to people. And that's what we're trying to help people do. We're not trying to squeeze that last ounce of effort out of them and get more out of them. It's we want to create this more work-life balance, or meaningful balance and interesting projects, because there are always going to be projects that are a little bit mind-numbing in accounting. There's no way around that. But the less amount of time you can spend on them, the better. And that really, it gives you time to grow and really enjoy your work.
This has been Count Me In, IMA's podcast, providing you with the latest perspectives of thought leaders from the accounting and finance profession. If you like what you heard and you'd like to be counted in for more relevant accounting and finance education, visit IMA's website at www.imanet.org.